Chapter 34. Retaliation. Kernford. The only people in the Kolsko house who slept the night of the attack were two babies and a toddler. Aeneas and Morwina never left their mother's arms, while Anarind and Tina Kales alternately held Dwina, who remained unaware her mother lay dead in one of the bedrooms, along with Norlin and the three guards. Onnit's body lay in another bedroom, attended by Breda and Mera. None of the adults or Merid Keelan slept. A swarm of medicans treated the injured, the most serious of whom were Kulich, Carnegie, and Sinwin. All would recover, though the headman would live without his lower left leg. And Sinwin would carry a great scar on one side of her face, from her chin up to just under her eye and back to her ear. Carnegie tried to insist a hole or two wasn't something to slow him down, but Gwynedd and then Yosef ruled otherwise, and he allowed himself to be seated in a chair. He flatly refused to lie down because he took that as a sign of a serious injury. The sun was half an hour from appearing above the eastern hills before the Kolsko grounds began to clear. More than 200 armed men had come to the house at various times during the night, in addition to medicants, Vortig Lewis and Petter Kenrick, St. Tomo's abbot, Keelan relatives and citizens living near the house or farther away. 2 hours before dawn, Kenrick had taken charge of the chaos, thanked others for their concern, and if they weren't essential, sent them home. Mulron Lewis, Vortig's son and commander of the 300-man standing garrison in Kernford, had organized a sweep of the surrounding 5 miles and come up empty. There was no sign of the attackers or any encampment attributable to them. The search would continue at daylight. Yosef attested that at least some of the attackers still remained at large. He'd witnessed one of the 4 men he'd fought in the hall flee out a window after stopping another man from climbing in. Yosef also thought he'd heard voices of more than 1 man outside the house, but he wasn't sure amid everything else going on. Yosef couldn't have slept if his life depended on it. He would later wonder whether his adrenaline level had set any new records, but whatever the physiological basis, his agitation wouldn't brook any immobility. He listened in on Mulron and Dennis making reports about new evidence of more attackers, and Lewis and Kenrick saying something to someone, none of which registered in his brain. He went to the room with Onnit's body and hugged Mera and Aeneas, then strode out to the grounds where 14 black-clad bodies were lined up. He walked over to a tent where medicans treated 2 badly wounded attackers, not expected to survive, and then he started the same cycle again. He lost track of time. All he noticed was that the sun sat high in the sky, and he wandered among the remaining men and horses in front of the house. "Are you okay, Yosef?" said a familiar voice that cut through the fog in his brain. He looked around, confused for a second about where he was until he saw Balwis standing beside him, looking concerned. "I killed 5 men. Yosef blurted without thinking. Balwis didn't respond for several moments. His eyes narrowed, and he took in Yosef as if for the first time. "They got what they deserved," he finally said. "I killed 2, and only wish I'd had the chance to gut more of them."
"Have you, you know, killed before?"
asked Yosef, his eyes haunted and burning at the same time.
"Yes," said Balwis. "When I escaped from Predi, I killed an Athani who caught me stashing food I was accumulating. I was stupid and didn't check carefully enough whether anyone was around when I went to Makash. He asked me what I was doing. I had no choice. I tossed him a sack of bread. He was startled and reacted to catch the sack, and while he was distracted, I pulled a knife and drove it into his stomach. He didn't utter a sound, just gave me a confused look while I pulled the knife out and stabbed him in the throat. Blood gushed all over me, and I almost puked. The next time was easier. I had crossed into Iwell when four Iwellese men stopped me about 30 miles from the Moreland border. I was surprised I'd made it that far. I don't know if they recognized my gear, wasn't Iwellese or what, but they demanded my identification and business. I'd taken two pistols from the first Nathani I killed, and I shot two of them before they reacted. One of the others fled, but one went for a pistol, and I drove my horse into his. Both of our horses went down, and he lay pinned under his. He was helpless and probably had a broken leg, so he wasn't going anywhere. Since the fourth had already fled, I had no real reason to kill him. But I didn't hesitate. I could only remember how Nathani had killed my father. And in my mind, at that moment, I was avenging my father's death. So yes, I've killed. And I have no qualms. I only wish I could kill every last Nathani and Iwellese. This was the first time for me, said Yosef, his voice detached, as if noting a casual event. At St. Citron's, I wounded one Baldorian, more by luck than intent. At Moreland City, I helped direct cannon, though I couldn't identify whether we hit anyone. I assume we did, but they weren't nearby. This time, I shot a man 7 feet from me and saw him fall. I shot another one, and the light on the veranda let me see the impact on his chest. Another I shot in the back in the hall. Then I pulled a knife, and the rest is a blur. I do remember that one of the attackers was still alive. I stood over him thinking we needed to keep him alive for questioning. I don't know what happened, but I stabbed him over and over. It was like I was a different person, or insane, or, oh, I don't know, not myself. I should have kept him alive, Yosef said, looking at Ball was for an explanation or an exculpation. All that seemed to matter was that he needed to be killed. And I almost felt disappointed when the fighting stopped and there were no more of them to kill. It's just the heat of battle, said Balwas, laying a hand on Yosef's shoulder. We need that extra energy, or whatever you want to call it, to survive. Listen to yourself, Yosef. You say you killed five of them? How many lives did you save? What if those men had gotten to the Great Room? Who else might have died? Perhaps everyone. You and I are different, but if it was me, I would give thanks to God for giving me the strength to kill and save those who survived. Yosef patted Balwas's arm. He didn't feel reassured about himself, but appreciated the human contact. He opened his mouth to ask something. He later didn't remember what, when voices alerted them to get out of the way as a rider tore down the drive toward the house. Everyone's nerves were on edge. Damnation, watch where you're going, and God's blood, who is this idiot? Were only a few of the imprecations hurled at the rider. Messages for the Hetman! Shouted the rider, overriding all other noise. It's the Nathani! They've invaded Swavebrook and attacked other Hetman!
The previous level of shouts would have been lost amid what resulted. Only when Vortig Lewis burst from the house did the cacophony subside.
Shut up! All of you!
The rider, whom Yosef identified as one of the Kernford Semaphore station staff, ran to Lewis and handed him several sheets used for semaphore messages. Lewis read the first, clenched his teeth, and moved to the second sheet. If anything, his face turned redder than from reading the first message. By the time he finished the third message, the red had faded to pale, almost white. Not the white of fear, but the white of fury beyond mere blood. He read the messages several more times. The 40 or so men and a few women who'd crowded around Lewis murmured until Lewis gathered himself, his voice oddly emotionless, considering the expression on his face and the look in his eyes.
The Narthani landed in force at Shulik, the Suevbro capital. Their headman has ordered the city evacuated inland, and they're fighting within the city to delay the Narthani from pursuing those who fled.
Questions and exclamations began, only to be silenced again by Lewis.
The Farkish, Vandinka, and Puid clans have started men moving towards Swavebrook, but it'll be several days before enough get there to stop the Narthani. The son of Hetman Swavebrook sent messages that they expect the city to fall completely before help can arrive.
Lewis held up both hands to quell a renewed chorus. This time, a deafening quiet ensued, as if everyone dreaded what would come.
There have also been assassination attacks on the Skooks and Bevan's hetman. Zitwin Bevan's is safe, and all of his attackers were killed. Alex Skooks is dead, along with his wife and the entire family of one of his daughters. If I remember, there were 6 children in that family.
He spoke the last word softly, in wonder and anguish. To find a quiet, unbloodied room where they wouldn't bother the wounded and grieving, the Keelan leaders moved to the cottage used by Yosef's shadows when they spent the night. No one sat. Not that there were enough chairs. Vortig and Mulrun Lewis, Petter Kenrick, Dennis Vega, and Yosef stood in a circle, along with Abbot Walcott of St. Tomo's, who had returned as soon as he heard the news of the other attacks.
The headman is resting right now, said Lewis. The medicine say he just got to sleep an hour ago, so I don't want to wake him yet.
There are already plans in place for just this eventuality, said Yosef.
Dennis nodded vigorously.
Yosef's right. The Ready Reaction Force must move to Dornfeld to re-equip with the pre-positioned horses and weapons. Then we move into Iwell and raid as far west as we can.
That's a decision only college can make, asserted Kenrick.
The decision was already made, Dennis shot back.
The intent was made, not the decision to do it, said Lewis.
Father,
said Mulrun Lewis,
I agree with Yosef and Dennis.
The Hetman approved this action based on the same scenario that has happened. The Narthani attacking a clan on the other side of Cadellium. We couldn't send men to Swaybrook in time to help, and even if we could, I don't think we want too many of our men that far away. However, by raiding inside Iwell and threatening Preddy, we might cause the Narthani to withdraw from Swaybrook before they do maximum damage. Even if that's too late, the idea is sound that it might prevent them from doing the same thing again.
Before a heated argument started, Yosef spoke up.
There's no conflict in both setting the reaction force in motion and getting Kulch's approval.
Given his condition, it could be hours, even a day or two, before he's fully aware enough to judge the situation. It will take that long or longer for the reaction force to get into position. I suggest they start off toward Dornfeld immediately. Time is a critical factor. If we wait and it takes 2 or 3 days for college to give approval, it may be too late to act. If the force starts off and college does not give approval, the raid can always be canceled or even called back, if they have already crossed into Iowa. Dennis leaned forward as if on a starting line.
I have already sent word to the RRF camp to prepare to move. We could be on the road in an hour.
Lewis still frowned, but had a sense of hesitancy in his expression.
Well, I...
Vordig, Kendrick interjected. I see no harm in letting Dennis start. And let's be honest, college lost on it. It's more likely you and I would have to counsel restraint rather than him not agreeing to strike at the Narthani.
Lewis's face saddened at the mention of the dead Keelan daughter.
I hate making college deal with anything right now except his family. God's mercy. I hope God doesn't think me blasphemous. But how can he allow something like this to happen?
God understands how you feel, Vortig, said Abbot Walcott. Remember that he allows humans to make their own destinies. We can call on him for strength, but cannot lay on him what is caused by ourselves.
I know, Abbot, it's just...
Lewis shook himself and stood stiff from the dejected slump he'd briefly assumed.
All right. I agree. There's no reason not to put the reaction force in motion.
Lewis looked at Kenrick.
Petter, do you agree?
Yes. Dennis, get your men headed to Dornfeld.
Dennis's mouth twisted into a snarl.
I'm sorry, Abbot, but may God curse every Narthani and give us strength to send them all to hell. I'll send word when we start off. As I said, it should be no more than an hour.
Dennis walked to the door and Yosef followed to stop him outside the cottage.
Remember, Dennis, we're not trying to achieve a victory in battle or even kill Narthani. Our objective is to cause damage and make the Narthani draw inward. Don't get carried away and put yourself and our men in a situation where you can be trapped. The Narthani should be surprised, but they still have thousands of men in Predi, and they control the seas. Give them time and opportunity, and they could land troops behind you to cut off the direct way back to Keelan. Don't get carried away by a sense of either victory or vengeance.
Dennis's face remained impassive. He wasn't offended by Yosef's reminder that at the Battle of Moreland City, he had almost continued the attack on the Narthani after they had repositioned from the clan surprise attack. Only Yosef's grabbing his attention and yelling that it was time to withdraw had saved them from a potential disaster.
I learned my lesson, Yosef. I'll bring the men back. We'll need every one. The second Narthani invasion won't be the last. But maybe we can buy time and get the clans better prepared when it happens again.
Good man,
said Yosef, and let Dennis hustle to his horse and several men waiting for him. Yosef saw him say something to the men, who received his words with grim approval. The group mounted and galloped toward Kernford, and Yosef walked back into the cottage. The group there exchanged a few last words before each man returned to what he saw as his immediate task. Yosef stopped Balwis.
Wait a moment.
When they were alone, Yosef let self-control slip away, and Balwis saw an expression and a pair of eyes he had never seen before on Yosef. Balwis couldn't exactly define what he saw. Cold fury. Deadly intent, and other phrases passed through his mind without being an exact match.
We hope the reaction force raid makes the Narthani rethink any future plans about attacks like the one on Swavebrook,
Yosef said in a low voice.
The assassinations are something else. This is the second time they've tried multiple attempts at the same time. just as the raid is meant to discourage them from not keeping all their forces at home, we need to send another message. Yosef's eyes took on the distant look Balwas usually saw when Yosef considered ideas or heard a voice. Balwas waited. After almost a minute, Yosef's eyes refocused. "Not now, Balwas," said Yosef. "I have to think more on this. We'll talk later." Clitwith, Stent Province. The Stent clan capital lay 80 miles inland. The province's coast was so rocky and the water so marked by reefs and shoals that the only settlements were two small fishing villages. Both of these had moved their families farther into Stent, and even the fishermen slept in tents 3 miles from the coast. Although the news of the Swaybroke attack and the assassination attempt shocked the populace of Clitwith, they didn't panic. The distance from potential seaborne attacks and the preparation plans had been Stent had put in motion gave the people a sense of focus absent in Swaybroke. The planning had also accounted for their not being able to consult all of the clan's boyermen before major decisions needed implementing. Thus, within hours of news of the Narthani attacks, Stent's actions were in motion. The word went out and 1,500 men from all over Stent moved to assemble near the location where the borders of the Stent, Swaybroke, Pewit, and Vandinka provinces touched. Whether the men moved into Swaybroke and into action against the Narthani, or assisted the Swaybrokers in some other manner, would be left to later circumstances and decisions. But they were on the move. The second action occurred in response to word from Kernford that the Southern Rapid Reaction Force had deployed in preparation for a raid into Iwal and possibly as far as Pretty. Wellman Stent had understood the reasoning behind that proposed raid and the one his own clan would participate in, but he felt uneasy because the reaction force was not as well developed and trained as he would like. He also felt disquieted because he would have to lead the foray into Iwal. He wasn't concerned about his own safety, but because of the necessity that only a headman had the stature to hold together a force composed of men from four clans. The 1,200 men included 500 of his own clansmen, 400 Moorlanders, 200 Orosians, and 100 Baltekians. He would have preferred not involving the men from Moorland. But since the raid would launch from Moorland territory, it needed their titular approval. Wellman had voiced his doubts in a meeting with Tomez Oros. Although the Oros headman had sympathized, he had argued for the importance of not only integrating Moorland into an effort against the Narthani, but also that involvement in the reaction force might help divert the attention of various Moorland factions that kept jockeying for position, trying to replace the leadership ranks devastated by their deceased hetman's mistake at the Battle of Moorland City. Wellman briefly considered whether he could avoid using the reaction force and employ only his own clansmen. However, he had to quickly dismiss that option. It would take too long to gather enough men. The Northern Reaction Force encamped only 40 miles from the Iwal border, and he needed to ride hard to cover the 70 miles from Clitwith. Before leaving, he would order 400 Stent men to muster and head for the encampment. They would serve as a reserve, if the raid went poorly, and would be the only help available. At least, they would be his own clansmen. Kernford. After leaving Balwas, Yosef had gone to Mera, sitting in the room with her sleeping father. Breda sat in a chair with Mera to sleep in her lap. Mera was breastfeeding Aeneas. The otherwise intimate scene was marred by darkness in her eyes and tracks of dried tears on her cheeks. He mouthed whether she needed anything, but she only shook her head. He walked to the great room, still covered with evidence of the previous night. Furniture that had been pulled to form some protection was now pushed aside. Blood, So much blood, now dried into dark patches on the carpets and the wooden planks. Holes where shot balls had missed targets or passed through flesh. Discarded weapons.
Yosef picked up a heavy chair and hurled it across the room, overturning one of the few undamaged pieces of furniture. A man he didn't recognize rushed into the room in response to the noise, took one look at Yosef, and left. Part of Yosef wanted to get away from the house, but the part that prevailed wanted to ingrain every image into his brain. The bloody room. Aeneas's nightshirt with the hole mere inches from his tiny body. On it, lying dead. The warm teenage girl would never grow into the beautiful woman who dreamed of her own family. Norlin, who would not finish his education or decide, as he'd confided to Yosef, whether he wanted to change the focus of his studies. Miramel, Aeneas's wet nurse. Relatively simple-minded but friendly, and looked on fondly by all who met her. The three guards who had done their best to do their duty, who probably had families and whose names Yosef didn't know. Kalich, who would be fitted with a peg for his missing lower leg, and more important, who now had a dead daughter. The news about the slaughter of Hetman Skooks and many members of his family, including children. The attack on Swavebroke and the unknown number who would die fleeing or defending. And himself. The five men he'd killed, four while fighting, the fifth only semi-conscious and defenseless when Yosef had stabbed him enough times to kill him several times over. Part of him thought he should feel anguish or at least regrets over killing other humans, but he remembered how he'd been angry last night, that there were no more Nathani to kill. He passed a mirror and deliberately avoided looking at his reflection, not sure what he would see.
Thud.
He'd walked into a wall without realizing it was there. He'd been awake for 30 hours and needed to sleep before his mind shut down. He went back to the cottage where the six men had met and decided to send Dennis and the reaction force to Dornfeld. He lay on one of the two beds, wondering whether he could fall asleep. A hand shook him by the shoulder.
What?
Yosef, said a voice. Wake up. He looked up into Bolwis's face.
How long was I asleep?
I don't know, said Bolwis. Kalich is awake, and the others are gathering to see if he's in shape to talk about Dennis's raid.
Yosef hurriedly swung his legs off the bed and stood upright, staggering for a moment, then followed Bolwis toward the house. He noticed the sun's shadows and estimated he must have slept at least 3 hours. He and Bolwis were the last to arrive. The others surrounded Kulich's bed, where the hetman sat propped up against pillows, his face ashen with pain and grief, but his eyes clear.
They found some poppy extract on one of the attackers, whispered Bolwis. The medicines gave the hetman enough to dull the pain and leave him coherent.
Yosef, said Kulich, his voice ragged. They've told me about sending Dennis and the reaction force toward Dornfeld. I agree with the decision. Yet I worry about them getting themselves trapped if the Nathani react faster than we expected when we dreamed up this plan.
It's a danger, Yosef agreed. Still, risks have to be taken.
The Nathani have to learn they can't launch attacks without knowing we can respond toward their weakened home territory. However, I share your concern and think we need to move more focus to Dornfeld to provide support if Dennis runs into too much trouble. Keelan already has 500 men at Dornfeld and the fort blocking the Diligon Pass. Not all those men are appropriate for offensive operations. Perhaps half are. With those and more we can muster quickly, we should put 1,000 men and additional supplies across the Iowa border and set up a camp in a defensible position that Dennis can fall back to. The reaction force has 6-pounders. The additional force can take more 6-pounders and several batteries of 12-pounders. If we pick the location properly, there should be nothing the Nathani can throw at the position before everyone can withdraw back to Keelan.
I suggest Mulrun Lewis to be in command, and I'll organize the artillery and accompany this reserve force.
That's putting another 1,000 Keelan men in danger,
Kenric protested.
No, Yosef may be right, said Vortig Lewis. It's been a few years, but before the Narthani came to Cadellium and the damn Iwalees went over to them, I spent a month in that part of Iwal. I remember the terrain. Although the hills aren't high, the sides are steep. There are any number of places where 1,000 men and artillery could stop any Narthani force for several days.
I'll feel better about this if Dennis had a backup. Lewis asked Kalich.
What do you think, Hetman?
Kalich had closed his eyes while listening and opened them to answer.
I agree. Vortig, go ahead and muster the men. Mulrun will command Kenric.
Work with Mulrun and Vortig on the supplies and other needs. The reaction force will be well into Iwal before the support camp can start to be set up, so speed is essential.
As for Yosef going along to help with the artillery, I approve. But Mulrun, you are not to allow him to go farther than the camp. You have my permission to take whatever means necessary to keep him from doing anything heroic, like at Moreland City.
Yes, Hetman,
said Mulrun, eyeing Yosef with a look conveying he wasn't sure which of the Hetman's assignments would be the easiest. Kalich closed his eyes again.
I need to rest. I think you know what needs to be done. Keep me informed of any news or problems.
Kalich's eyes shot open again.
Before I drift off again, the news about other attacks. Are they confirmed?
Yes, Kalich, said Lewis, his voice harsh with anger.
Hetman Skooks is dead. The attack on Hetman Bevins failed. The latest word from Swaybrook is that the people of Shulik are moving away from the city as fast as possible. Hetman Swaybrook and an unknown number of his men are fighting the Narthani within the city to slow them from pursuing the fleeing citizens. There's no further word on how the fighting is going.
Kalich shook his head slowly and drifted off.
He needs to rest, said Kenric. We can continue outside.
They went out to the front veranda. Reminders of the previous night were the hole in the front door where a shotgun had blasted away the lock, broken windows, and bloodstains where the second attacker Yosef had shot bled away his life.
Mulrun and I will organize the men to form the support force, said Vortig Lewis. It would have been best to simply use men from the northwestern districts, but they haven't had enough time training as dragoons or using the new artillery, and Armin and Dornfeld haven't had the training at all. That only leaves men closer to Kernford.
We could compromise, Father, said Mulrun Lewis. I can put together 600 men from the Kernford garrison and neighboring districts where the training has been ongoing. In a day, two at the most, we can be moving hard toward Dornfeld. We can add another 600 men from the Northwest clans and integrate them with the other men. It won't be optimal, but for this purpose, it's not crucial that all the men know how to fight as dragoons. After all, we're talking about establishing a defensible position, not offensive operations like Dennis is doing. Then there are the men already at Dornfeld. I could include perhaps 200 of them to either go with us all the way, or set up a second fallback position closer to Dornfeld.
Lewis looked at Kenric for his opinion.
This is more your responsibility, Vortig, responded Kenric. Although if we're sending Dennis off, it isn't a bad idea to have support, in case it's needed.
All right, Mulrun, said Vortig. Set it all in motion. Let me know what instructions from the clan headquarters need to be sent out.
Lewis looked around.
Anything else? No one responded. Off we go, then.
Yosef almost blurted out that he had another topic, but he caught himself just in time. It occurred to him that he didn't require input or permission for what he had in mind. He only needed to accept responsibility if things went wrong.
He wandered around, looking for his escaped pretty shadow, and found him standing outside the room where medicans attended Sinewin.
Balwas, follow me!
They moved out of the house and stopped when 50 feet from the nearest person. Yosef didn't want anyone to listen in.
You mentioned that you had been to Hounslow, right?
Yes, twice.
Balwas responded.
When I was 14, I helped my father drive 50 horses from our ranch to Hounslow. It was unusual for father to deliver horses so far away, but the price was too good to pass up. When we got there, the buyer was away and we had to wait 5 days. I got to know the city fairly well, since there was nothing else to do. The second time was just before the Nathani took control of Bredi. This time I went alone to take possession of 3 mares my father had purchased from an Iwell horse ranch known for its breeding stock.
So, said Yosef carefully, do you consider yourself familiar enough with the Hounslow that you could find your way around the city easily?
It's been a few years since I was there, but I don't imagine it has changed that much.
Always.
Yosef paused, arguing with himself whether the potential reward would prove great enough for men to take the enormous risk he feared it would be. He tried to find reasons that the answer would be no, and failed.
Balwas, I have an idea.
Something that would strike harder than Arthani, and, I hope, convince them to stop with these assassination attempts. However, it's very dangerous. How much so, I can't honestly estimate. Balwas grinned.
I have the feeling you're working your way up to seeing if I would volunteer for this idea of yours.
It is strictly volunteer. Let me tell you what it is, and you can tell me why I'm crazy to think you're insane enough to do it.
Half an hour later, Balwas had gone through a succession of opinions that ranged from curiosity about Yosef's latest idea to being incredulous that Yosef thought he would volunteer, to grudgingly admitting the idea might work, but not with himself participating, and finally, to wanting to know more details before he committed.
For more details, we'll have to talk with Honorend and Gwennet, said Yosef.
They found Honorend holding Aeneas and sitting with Mera, who had finally fallen asleep in her chair next to her father's bed. Gwennet had been feeding porridge to Morwena in one of the guest cottages. The four adults sat around a table in the cottage. If this was going to be possible, they'd need Honorend and Gwennet to remember all they could. As much as Yosef hated to press the two women, he only hoped they had the fortitude to help.